This is a previously recorded episode.
Welcome to the Cassie Sobelton Show. This is a podcast focused on mind, body, and spirit wellness. I'm your host, Cassie Sobelton, a best-selling author, speaker, and wellness expert. You can find me online at CassieSobelton.com. Each week, we'll dive into a different wellness topic with a focus on teaching you how to achieve wellness realistically. No lofty goals, no over-the-top crazy diets. This is wellness for the real world. Just practical, easy suggestions and ways to improve your life. Thank you for listening. Now on to the show.
My house in Budapest, my hidden treasure chest, golden grand piano, my beauty focus, Leo, you. Ooh, you. Ooh, I'd leave it all.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Cassie Sobelton Show. I am excited to share with you that I have five of the most fabulous wellness women in Detroit in the studio today. Oh boy, they range from a lot of different disciplines and expertises. So I'm going to let them all go around the room, give a quick 30-second intro, maybe a minute if they're nice, and tell us a little bit about who they are, what they do, why they're here. And we have some strong, awesome personalities in the room, so I'm sure we'll get into some really great topics, all things women and wellness. So why don't we start with Renee?
Hi, Renee Heigl here, and I show people how to feed themselves and love themselves. That's how my business works.
And love themselves what?
Naked.
Naked.
Love themselves naked. Thanks for the tee off there. And, you know, ultimately, there's an emotional connection to food. There's emotional connection to our body. And there's also a lot of mental, physical habits that we need to utilize to seek longevity. And so I'm here for a completely personal reason, because I wanted to hang out with badass women. So, and it feels really good. There's a lot of fun, like, female energy.
We're all going to start our period here.
Yeah.
The next hour.
So, yeah. Thanks for having me.
Mm. Thanks for being here. Amber?
Amber Pupor. I currently own The Clean Plate, which is a vegetarian restaurant in Shelby Township. Also, the Cacao Tree Cafe, which is a smoothie juice bar in Royal Oak.
Two of my favorites.
Exactly. Been a consultant with Green Space in Ferndale.
One of my other favorites.
Absolutely. But my passion is feeding people, reaching people direct and inspiring them to make better dietary choices, focusing on whole foods.
Nice.
So, and I agree with Renee. I'm here to be with some strong, powerful women.
I love it. We're going to have some great discussion. Natalia, why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Natalia Petrozek. I'm the founder of Visby, which is a software company that helps people visualize their goals and their futures more easily and frequently. And I have a, as most of us do, a path to continued wellness. I do better some months than others. I don't consider myself an expert, but just the everyday person that's committed to trying to eat as healthy and clean to nourish my body and do things from meditation to yoga and just different practices. So not the expert on that, more on the visualization side.
That's what I was just going to say. And that's such a huge
but it's a part of it.
Of
you
wellness.
Know, one of our testimonials comes from NBC's Biggest Loser, Pete Thomas, who's based out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, who used visualization to help him stay the course for health and wellness. So I think it's has a role.
Nice. Not being mainstream media, I'm not quite sure who he is, but did he win?
Well, he ended up winning, I think, the take home. I think they used to at least send back the contestants that didn't win, and they had the at home prize. So
okay.
He came back.
But he won, like he
won, I think, $100,000 for the at home prize. And he ended up losing the most weight ever in the history of the show.
That's what I was curious about. Awesome.
Yeah.
Good for him. Wow. It works. Look at that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The combination of his commitment and the visualization was a good duo.
Yay, yep. Visby.
Yay, Visby. Yay, what's his name?
Pete Thomas.
Yay, Pete.
Oh, he's
Yay,
amazing.
Visby.
Gosh. He's an author, and he's an author locally and helps do speaking engagements in the corporate arena. So Pete
amazing.
Thomas, look him up if
him.
Anyone's interested.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Bria, you're up.
Awesome. Well, I'm honored to be sitting at this table because you should see all of these beautiful, smart, powerful women here. It's just on radio, so you don't have the visual.
Well,
right
behind you.
Right. Okay.
YouTube.
Find us on YouTube. you can check out the back of my shirt. So my name's Priya Shah. I am a holistic physical therapist, so I kind of integrate traditional physical therapy with holistic concepts and integrating you know, craniosacral therapy, yoga, and nutrition and supplementation to kind of go beyond just traditional exercise and take people to a deeper, more pure, authentic level of healing. Thanks,
love it.
Cassie. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Angie, you are up, lady.
Angie Nijinsky. I, as well, am very honored to be here. You guys are insane, and I'm feeling unqualified.
Angie's the talent.
I'm Angie's the entertainment. that's why I'm here. I'm a mom of three. I am an elementary school teacher by trade, but I've been raising my three kids for the past 12 years. I'm also a CrossFit coach and badass barbell lifter.
Yes, she is.
I'm a swim instructor. I love working with kids. My husband's a chiropractor, and I work as like a patient liaison in his office, and I help patients with nutrition, getting their kids to eat better, getting themselves to eat better, getting themselves to move, whatever their health, wellness needs, I'm there to help them. And I love that I'm kind of like the resource of my family and friends when they have a question about their diva cup or their period, their, you know, what they should eat when they start feeling
I knew
crappy.
You would say diva cup within 60 seconds. Yeah, I'm so happy you proved me right.
Yeah, whatever it is. So, yeah, that's why I'm here.
I love it. And actually, there's nothing unqualified about you, Angie. I've learned so much from you. And the way you're able to integrate this into your family, into your husband's practice, you know, really driving that home, I think is unique and something to be applauded. So thanks for being here, all of you. You know, as we start out, there are so many topics. I can't even imagine where we're going to go with this. So I don't want to be structured with it, but I really do want to talk about some of the ways that all of us have incorporated wellness or positivity or visualization or, you know, healthy habits into our life and what that's done for us. So, you know, as we kind of kick this off, I already know at this table a lot of the different nutrition camps that we all sit in. And when I mean what I mean when I say that is, you know, veganism, vegetarianism, paleo, you know, raw, whatever. There's so much to it. I've gone through a lot of those changes in my life. I healed my Crohn's disease with an all raw vegetarian vegan diet. And then realized it wasn't working for me anymore. I started eating cooked foods and now eat a little bit of dairy. Slowly over time, whatever my body needs is what I give it. But there are a lot of philosophies out there, and especially Ms. CrossFit over there. I'm sure you're eating a lot of meat these days. And I know that you do a lot of – is cow share the right word?
Well, I believe that if animals are raised the appropriate way and they're fed what God made them to eat, that – it's okay to eat it in moderation. I have, however, switched my protein because I do a lot of protein to a vegan protein because I realized that even if the whey was high integrity, it was causing a lot of inflammation in my gut. And I you know what? That's my greatest problem is I fart within 5 minutes of eating any dairy or grains. And so I had to remove it from my diet, and I need a lot of protein. So I am supplementing with a vegan protein, which is has been a great thing for me. But, yeah, I do eat meat. I'm a meat
but
eater.
But hold on. I'm specific. Didn't you have a cow share?
Yeah.
Okay, where is that? And how does someone get involved in that? Because I get asked those questions. I have no idea what to tell people. You have, like, raw milk through it. I know
you're big into it. Yeah, but we don't do that anymore because we just don't do dairy.
Okay.
So we did used to get raw milk at a farm. It was called, like, Honey Tree Farms, and it was in Byron, Michigan. And it was an amazing thing. And I actually didn't have so much of a reaction to the raw milk, but I just removed it from our diet altogether.
Can't get raw milk in a store.
No, you can't because it's not legal. You have to own a share of the cow.
That's right. And so that's kind of the legal way around it is you buy a portion of a cow and you pay a farmer to hold it there and to milk it and, you know, provide this with you and then you go get it. So for those people who tell me, you know, I can't find raw milk. Well, go buy a cow. And they're I'm like, no, I'm serious. Buy a cow. Like, I don't know where to tell you to go, but I have friends that do it, you know? So it works, but you're the person who introduced me to that. Talk about qualified.
Yep.
So, I mean, the person that's least qualified here, because I don't have a wellness background, Natalia speaking. So what is the benefit of raw milk? I know that, you know, there's things like almond milk and coconut milk and other things that I've kind of started to turn to versus the dairy. I've tried to just eliminate cow milk. So what is the raw benefit?
I'll let Amber or Renee answer that.
Well, Renee.
Thanks. Well, I got to preface by saying I used to be the person who bought the cow.
Mm-hmm. Did you?
Yeah.
Nice.
I for about 5 or 6 years of my life, and I had the big freezer in my garage at the time and bought a lot of chickens. I started my very first business, which was not successful, but I supported – I just love local farmers and what they're doing out there, and I'm a huge advocate for local farming. So I worked with them and helped grow their CSAs, and which stands for Community Supported Agriculture, by the way. So you pay into a share and you get a certain percentage of crops every single week or every other week. And, you know, long story short is the perspective I have now is not anything against anyone who eats meat, because certainly I've been there and I like meat sometimes, although I have no desire for it in this point in my life. I just started to see, motivated a little bit from Cowspiracy, if you've seen that documentary, that it's not sustainable to keep meat for the entire population. And I had this perspective, but if it's grass-fed and we could create all these really cool local farms and really take good care of the animals. But then I started to see that the only way we could do that is by basically wiping out all living environments to create these large, really nice farms, and it's not workable. So I don't eat meat now, but from a nutrition perspective, the benefits that you can get from cow milk that is raw would be really more like the digestive enzymes, mm-hmm. you know, and there can be really good benefits from that. But along with it, and the science shows, comes a little bit more inflammation. And it also based on how you raise that little cow, mm-hmm. you know, so.
The little cow matters.
Yeah.
Cow matters. Mm-hmm. So along those lines, you know, there's paleo out there. There's, you know, a lot of talk about sugar and grains and allergies and nuts and all that great stuff. I know that, Renee, you do a sugar detox program, so you obviously know a lot about the sugar. But anyone else have any other allergies when it comes to grains or nuts or, you know, dealing with that with your kids?
I just went off gluten. And I've, you know, gone on and off all different things, kind of like you, Cassie. You know, you go through a period that you try this diet and it works for you, and then all of a sudden it's not. So I used to be a big bread girl, you know.
Oh, yeah,
that
you
was
did.
Like huge bread and butter. And
now
so,
it's mushrooms and butter.
Right.
She replaced yeah. bread with mushrooms.
Heck yeah, that's awesome. And so those are medicinal mushrooms.
And I've seen you use both.
And so gluten, you know, you hear so much about gluten, and, you know, there's a lot of conversations around it, whether it's the gluten or the glycophage. But I was having a lot of allergies to cats, and I had used to have cats. So I'm like, what's going on with, like, all of a sudden I have all these cat allergies? So just kind of on a whim of trying to, like, understand that allergies came from my gut, I was like, well, let me go off gluten. And I actually was not kind of on this whole gluten camp. And I went off gluten, and I am not allergic to cats anymore. So, wow. Like, talk about how crazy life
that
is,
That same
right?
thing happened to me, by the way.
Yeah.
This is Renee.
Yeah.
Exact
so,
same thing.
To cats?
Yes.
Yeah, so. To cats. Yeah.
Yeah. So weird. Well, it goes to show that it was actually inflammation in the gut.
In the gut,
and
yeah.
problems that were going on that stopped your immune system from being able to handle cats being around you and
right.
threw up this allergy, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Wow. And it's such a holistic way of looking at the body because, like, you know, I learned in school, if you have allergies, you take, you know, an immune suppressor.
Right.
And here, in my new way of understanding the body, when I had allergies, I healed my gut and my allergies went away. Like, totally opposite mm-hmm. understanding of my body.
So if I call up an allergist, will you have this conversation with him?
Yeah, I think we both know one, actually.
We know one. Let's call him and see how that goes.
That would be great. Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah. Can we Skype him in real quick?
Yeah. Let's do that.
So Jessica's smiling and nodding at me. Like,
let's
sure.
Let's call security at the same time.
Yeah, right. Since I'm representing the, like, most common, least educated person here, where do you guys stand on gluten-free? Because I hear you hear so many things as you do with trends in diet and stuff, and I've heard both sides of the coin. So I would love to hear what the experts have to say.
Well, it's interesting. This is Amber. Being in the food industry
foodie.
And seeing it firsthand, the unfortunate thing to me is it's wonderful when we acknowledge the fact that we do have imbalance in our gut and we go for good gut health and achieve better results. Unfortunately, when it becomes a trend, mm-hmm. we tend to replace foods with not so healthy foods. Mm-hmm. So instead of just eating the whole grains, which contain gluten, we find ourselves eating all these odd substitutions, gums. You know, you find guar gum and xanthan gum in almost every kind of gluten-free labeled product. So again, it moves us away from just consuming whole natural foods and back into the processed foods. So that's what I hate personally about it is that you're really driven to every product now. Even like, well, I don't want to talk about brands, but unfortunately, things that never had gluten label themselves as gluten-free as a marketing scam. Mm-hmm.
Which so naturally gluten-free is actually what you'd want to do versus taking a food that had gluten and they pull the gluten out and replace it with something else, an additive of
Which is one of the big ones, too. You know, this is Renee, the guar gum and all that, and tapioca. Mm-hmm. Tapioca, is it can really impact your thyroid. And
that's interesting.
And
I didn't know
excess
that.
Of it is not a good thing. And so if you look at the ingredients on most gluten-free stuff, what you're really getting is an excess of a lot of other stuff that you don't want.
Right. And, you know, I remember seeing some clip online, and I don't have actual TV running into my house, and I can't remember. Maybe you guys want to know. One of the late-night talk show hosts, they did something where they took – you know, a mic to the streets and they said, a camera and mic and said, what is gluten? And it was all people that were self-proclaimingly gluten-free. And they were like, I don't remember what they were saying. Like, it was just the most ridiculous. They don't even know what gluten is, but they're gluten-free. And it's just because it's this new, like, get skinny trend or whatever it is. But gluten is actually the protein that's found inside of wheat and so, or whole grains. And it's really interesting because if you're not gluten intolerant, to take the protein out is the stupidest thing you could ever do. Like, why in God's name would you want to take the protein out and then you're all telling me that you can't find ways to get protein, but you're eating gluten-free wheat bread because it's the new fad, but they don't even understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's very stupid. It is. Very stupid. Listeners, don't do that.
Exactly. Stop it. It's funny because being in the vegetarian plant-based world, what's the most common question?
Is it
how do you get your protein?
Oh, yeah, right, you know, of course.
I mean, so here we are again, and I'm a big fan of the China study and Dr. Campbell and Plant Pure Nation. And, you know, when we look at how we have transitioned to the point where something like Wonder Bread became commonplace, where we were stripping out the proteins, the nutrients, and replacing it with a product that we can't absorb in a healthy way. It's just – it's unfortunate that we've moved so far from what is innate in us as human beings to consume as far as food. But I think it's refreshing that we're really cycling back, talking about small farms. You know, I mean, I always say I'm hardcore vegetarian, but I'm pro-hunter because if we actually had to go through the effort of sourcing our own animal products by hand, we wouldn't be consuming it every day, three meals a day.
Right.
So yeah. – You know, it's just really about connecting with our roots and what we're naturally here to do. It's no different than eating too many nuts.
You know, Renee, when you were saying getting away from the meat, you know, and the sustainability for the environment, I was thinking, well, what if people ate meat twice a week, let's say? So it wasn't something they eliminated for everything.
Right.
But they just did more vegetarian options throughout the week. I wonder then, would that potentially be a sustainable model or not?
I haven't eaten meat yet today, and I'm kind of freaking out about it.
Really? Miss Paleo over
I'm
there?
I'm not. No, I'm
Are
not
you
freaking
paleo?
Out.
You're,
I'm paleo-ish, but
Angie.
I don't, but I also, I don't eat any pork. We eliminated pork like, I don't know, 13 years ago.
We meaning your family?
Yeah.
Okay. And your kids did that willingly, right?
They didn't know. they call it bacon. Fake bacon. It's turkey. Yeah. I was saying, oh gosh, I had a salad for lunch and I had this for breakfast and I'm eating at a vegan restaurant for dinner. Wow,
yay.
It's a no-meat day. Yeah. Gold star for Angie.
Yeah. I want to see Angie hunt for her own food.
I do too.
I want to be there when Angie's
That'd
all.
That'd be hot.
Angie. I mean, like, what kind of food?
What is the, who's Tarzan's equivalent?
Yeah,
the one
Jane.
Yeah. She'll be in like a little Jane outfit going through the jungle. Totally. I could totally see that. Totally.
I've been known to wrestle after a couple of bottles of wine. Is that the same thing?
That is. It's similar.
She's going to start eating then.
Angie. She actually
I do bite.
Had her children in her home. She gave birth in her kitchen.
In my kitchen.
That right there is Jane. There's my Jane, and that's why I think that of you. Maybe tell us a little bit about that. How'd that go?
Well, I didn't plan to have my last one in the kitchen. I planned to have her at a hospital, and we had just moved from Iowa, where my husband had finished chiropractic school, and that's where I had my first daughter in a small hospital with a midwife and a doula, and it was drug-free, and it was awesome. And I went
for a hospital tour at U of M, and I was so overwhelmed. It was humongous. And all I kept saying is, I'm going to lose my experience. I'm going to lose control. And I started to kind of freak out, and I was due in 2 weeks.
Oh, boy.
And I told my midwife, I can't have the baby in that hospital. And she said, well, I can't do a home birth. And I said, well, I don't want the eye drops because we weren't going to vaccinate. Well, she said, well, Angie, if you don't do the eye drops, they will get a court order and take that baby away, and they will administer them and then give the baby back. And I don't know if you want to get into all that. And we legitimately started freaking out. So we started asking all of our patients who had a home birth. We found another chiropractor who had a home birth. I contacted that midwife. She took me on. I saw her one time. I went into labor on Christmas Eve.
Oh.
And I had
Thank
my first
you, baby Jesus.
I know. And I went into labor at midnight. She was at a cocktail party on
Christmas
Eve.
Came over half drunk.
And I had her at 4 a.m. and everything went well. She was like this insane, amazing woman who, like, self-proclaimed would do anything. She delivered a 12-pound baby that she reached and broke the clavicle to get the baby out because it's so big. She delivered breech twins. She, like, I just trusted her. And everything went well. I delivered my placenta in my stainless steel salad bowl. And
can you make me a salad afterwards out of that bowl?
You have probably eaten
I'm
salad
sure
in
I have.
But I'd never tell people until after they've eaten their salad. And we make salad in it every single night as a family and eat.
That's
out
awesome.
Of that
so did
bowl.
You what'd you do with your placenta?
Well, I froze it at first. We were renting a house and I froze it, and we were planning on planting a tree. When we finally bought a house, and then the freezer broke, and then I put it in the new freezer, and then we moved, and I put it in another freezer, and I finally was like, I need to get rid of this thing. There's DNA everywhere. And I was nervous about the garbage smell.
I totally planted a tree with a placenta in it, by the way, and hired these people to
was
bring
it your,
a tree.
Was it your?
Yeah,
your?
Not a placenta. It was my placenta. Okay, <you're>
like, I just want to make sure.
Should specify that. Yeah. Yeah.
There is like a company that
well, no, it was not
a just send it in. No, some guy showed up. You're like, hey, surprise.
If I wish I had a photo of the men's face when they saw me throw the placenta in the hole in the ground.
That's hilarious.
And they put the tree on. They were mortified. And I had to explain it, but it was really, I was like, it's my placenta and it's for my son. And, you know, and they're looking at me like I'm an insane lady.
Yeah, they're still telling stories about that to their friends and family.
Yeah. Exactly. It's grown to be the most beautiful, magnificent tree.
But yeah.
So
I was just going to say, Priya just had a little
one. I can get
one.
In on the placenta conversation.
Please.
Yeah. So I'm a new mom. I have a 3-month-old baby at home. So I just ate my placenta.
Awesome. You did not slip it to me, did you?
I know. No.
Bloody Mary's.
I was
Sunday
like,
brunch.
We were out of coffee creamer earlier, and Priya offered to put her milk in there.
Right.
Thank you, Priya. No. Go get us some real cream.
So, you know, doulas do it all the time. It's really great. She came to the hospital. I did deliver in the hospital. And she took my placenta. I had it in, like, a bucket and, like, biohazard. And she prepared it at her house, and then she brought it to my house. So it's just like encapsulated in little capsules. And so it really helps with postpartum depression and, you know, keeping your hormones regulated as you kind of gradually hormone down from this whole pregnancy experience. So for me, it was great. It was great.
And so did you put all of it into capsules?
Yep. It came out to be like 75 capsules.
Wow.
And you can prepare it different ways. And there's like the traditional way or the raw way and different ways to prepare it. But my doula, when she came over to deliver it, she's like, you know, you're really granola when you feel more comfortable talking about eating placentas than like going and like eating French fries at McDonald's. It's like,
true.
I fully admit that I eat my placenta, but if I ate, which I don't eat McDonald's French fries, I don't know if I actually would be able to admit that.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. So I do think it really does help with postpartum, and I don't know if there's research on it, but as a case study of myself, and I have a family history of postpartum depression, I did not go into postpartum depression while I was taking the placenta supplements.
Wow. Do you still have any left?
I have a few.
Can we pop one?
Yeah, let's all take one. We'll have a placenta
be like an
party.
Upper. A placenta party.
Oh my gosh.
We'll do that before the next podcast.
Yes, okay. Perfect. Yeah. Hey, we had someone join us. We had Julie Kwan Evans join in with the show.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was running a little late on a research project myself, but
Julie is a fitness guru in a lot of ways. So why don't you tell them just about 30-second overview of what you do?
Oh, gosh. Well, by trade, I do personal training and massage therapy, mindful meditation, kind of a collaboration and a comprehensive treatment plan for all different types of populations. At the same time, I guess a big project is I'm working on a PhD, and I just got back from a university trying to work on the correlation between trauma and different type of correlations with chronic illness.
I love that. So post-traumatic stress disorder was something that we've talked about in a podcast before. There's a lot to that. But I love that you just brought up meditation because that's something I wanted to touch upon here today. I know we have quite a few meditators in the room, but how many might we have by a show of hands? And I'll give it up.
Did you say masturbate or meditate?
A little bit of both. You can put up both hands, Angie.
All right.
So that'd be 100%. I bet 100% for both, actually, considering. But, meditation. Well, actually, both are really good for your health. So we can dive in either topic, Angie. I'll let you take the lead.
I would say that one of
God, no, I was kidding.
Okay, I am so lacking meditation. In is meditation. Like, my mental game isn't as strong as it needs to be, and that is one of the holes in my wellness, for sure.
We're going to bring you back to balance today.
I know.
Right back. There are so many different types of meditations out there, from guided meditations to visualization to, using a mantra-based meditation. I practice a lot of them, and they all do wonderful things. One thing that I absolutely love that I've been able to incorporate, not only in my life but in my nephew's life, I have a nephew who's 7 years old. His name is Dylan. And you guys have probably heard me talk about him before. Definitely people in this room have, but on the podcast as well. And I started doing yoga and meditation with him when he was about 3. And it was so cool to watch. And most recently met him at an ashram in Nassau, down in the Bahamas, and was able to take him to an ashram, which I know, Priya, we've done a podcast on that, talking about ashrams and what they are. But ashrams are basically where it's like ashram is to the yogic community what a monastery would be to the Buddhist. It's where people live and practice and just live the yogic lifestyle. And it was so cool to see his little 7-year-old eyes light up and to watch him seeing that center, you know, and hundreds of people meditating together and chanting. And he was dancing and had his little tambourine. And it was just so cute to see him like filled with spirit, not know why he was so happy, but just be thrilled. And one of the things I love about what they teach young children is you get a minute meditation per however old you are. And then every year on your birthday, you get to increase that by a minute. So a 4-year-old starts with a 4-minute meditation, you know, and it goes on from there. When I brought Dylan down to the ashram, this was absolutely hilarious. But there's something called satsang, which is a 2-hour program, a half hour meditation, a half hour chanting, and then some type of spiritual education or talk. And Dylan wanted to go for the whole thing. So that's 2 hours, right? And so I kept telling him, I said, well, honey, why don't we just go in the last few minutes of meditation, then you'll get the first few minutes of chanting, and then we'll go walk around. No, Aunt Cassie, I want to go with the big people for the whole time. And I was like, okay, so here we go, right, into this meditation hall. And, of course, I let already 10 minutes go by, so now maybe 20 for him to meditate. We get in there. We get all settled. He's feeling really cool, you know? I mean, like, it's a really neat environment. A few hundred people, like, eyes closed, meditating, silent as silent can be. We walk in the back all quiet. We sit down. We close our eyes. I'm not kidding. I counted because I knew what was going to happen. 30 seconds later, I look over. His eyes are open. He's looking all over. He sees me looking at him, closes his eyes, and looks forward. So another, like, 20 seconds later, I feel a little tap on my shoulder, and I look at him, and he says in a little tiny whisper, when are we going to do something else? And he wanted to be in there for 2 hours, you know? And I just looked at him. I'm like, you want to go walk around? He's like, yeah. Okay, so we get up and walk around. But, you know, he hadn't been practicing his meditation, of course, you know? And so 4 minutes for him is going to be big right now. And it's just so cute to watch these kids do this. And he now gets into lotus pose and puts his fingers up and, you know, does the whole meditation thing. But, Angie, have you been doing that with your children at all? Because maybe that would help you get in the practice.
I think it would. I think I would need to implement it and be a leader in that first.
Right. Clearly. I know Renee does a lot of meditation with her son.
Yeah. Manny, My son's name is Manny. Emmanuel, but he goes by Manny. He's 6 and a half. And, you know, my meditation practice was really pretty solid when he was around 3. And a little bit before that, but I wasn't so consistent. You know, it's had its ups and downs. But always I would be in a safe environment where I knew he couldn't leave. And I would practice sitting. I just call meditation sitting in front of him where he had a toy to play with. And I would let him know mom's meditating. And it wouldn't be long here. I'm talking like a few minutes or something, just so he would see that he would poke me and bother me and do everything he could. And I wouldn't let him break my meditation. And, you know, he would test it. And then after a while, he just got used to it. And, you know, there's moments where I'll wake up in the morning and I will sit in meditation and he'll come and he'll just be aware of it. And sometimes he joins in and I have a lot of polished rocks and stones around. He'll go grab them and I'll be meditating with my hands out and I'll feel someone put prayer beads or meditation stones in my hand and I kind of smile, you know, and I can tell he's there. And sometimes he sits, but I always invite him to. And if he doesn't want to, I don't force it. And a cool highlight from that practice anyway, I'm sure there's more I could do, but he was having a tough time going to sleep one night. He was just turned 6. And I said to him, he needed to figure it out. It's bedtime. If you have to lie in your bed, go lie in your bed. But it's bedtime. You can't get out of bed. And so I went and peeked in his room. And he was sitting in his bed with, you know, Indian style. Not Indian style. That's totally faux pas. Crisscross applesauce is what they say in his class. But anyway, you get the idea. And meditation.
Really? That's faux pas now?
I guess. Like a pretzel.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Why? Oh, Indian,
Native
I guess.
American.
Anyway, he was.
I'm Native American, like feather Native American.
Right.
And I don't care about that. I
You're one person, Cassie. Yeah.
I am. Just one. And not even 100%. Doesn't count.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he was meditating on his own. So he had known at the age of 6-ish to use that as a tool to calm himself down in order to get ready to go to sleep. It was cool. I wanted to take a picture, but I didn't want to interrupt it. So I didn't. But yeah, it's such a beautiful gift for us to hear what you said, too, about Dylan with, you know, if they're 7 years old, have 7 minutes. And if someone hasn't meditated before, you know, just start with 5 minutes of sitting and listening
three
to your breath.
Oprah Winfrey and Deepak Chopra have a free 21-day meditation challenge, which is a great resource. There's a lot of things on YouTube, so there's a lot of resources to get started.
Right.
I find myself ebbing and flowing with my meditation practice because of, unfortunately, how busy I am, not that there's ever an excuse. But I will sometimes get into it where I'm doing every day for a couple of weeks, and then I fall off, and I think that's probably happens. I personally, when I am regularly meditating, see significant benefits. So I couldn't recommend it enough, and I'm actually yearning for it because I've been more off the wagon than on lately.
Should we take a quick 10-minute meditation break?
In terms of the children, a few cool add-ons I wanted to say. Russell Simmons, who's the rap mogul, has made a commitment to have 1 million inner-city kids practice meditation. And so, you know, he's working with the city of Chicago right now and the Rahm Emanuel, the mayor, to do that, which is just really cool.
Very cool.
And, you know, there's mindfulness programs here in the state of Michigan that work with students as well. I have a friend, My Mindfulness, MI for Michigan, and she works with students. She's working with DPS and a few others right now.
Someone else just told me about that.
Yeah. So I think there are nice opportunities to engage children. And Gosh, I wish I learned half the things I had to stumble upon in adulthood as a child to start it earlier. But yeah, I highly endorse.
Wouldn't it be so cool to have parents like us?
Yes. My kids are so lucky.
I know. Your kids are lucky.
They're so lucky. I tell them every day.
Yeah. I bet you do.
So one of the things that my friend who was a meditation teacher, he taught meditation and he said with kids, he didn't start them till
they were
7.
Is that what meditation teachers do?
Yeah.
They teach one.
Well, there's different styles, and I don't want to like publicize which one. But they start at 7, and they just give them a mantra, and they don't actually have kids sit and meditate till they're like 12 or 13. From 7 to 12, they just give them their word and say, you know, like a walking meditation. So whenever you're out and you just need to like kind of center is the adult word, but you know, you just need to relax. You just keep repeating this word. And so it gets kids used to like mantras. And then when they're around 12, their mantra is pretty well imprinted on their subconscious. Then they start sitting practice.
That.
I love that too. Yeah. So even if they can't, oh my God, my kid could never sit, they can still meditate. You just give them a word, you know, the basic word om even, and you can just give them that word to repeat as their safe word. I think, you know, that's kind of the reference.
Getting kids ready with safe words already.
Yeah.
The beginning of the safe word world.
Yeah. The beginning of a primordial sound is that like Om Shanti, which just means, you know, peace, universe type stuff. So that's a good tool to use if anyone needs something to say that doesn't trigger thought.
Yeah. Talking about children, you mentioned something earlier, Angie, about vaccines.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Uh-oh.
Because I have some thoughts on it. I know Priya's struggling with it right now.
I'm struggling, yeah.
It's difficult as a parent, I think, because we put a lot of trust in doctors and medicine, and we really genuinely feel like they have our best interests at heart and our health as their priority. But I just have learned a lot through the years and stick by it strongly. And I haven't...
Stick by what?
I don't vaccinate my kids. I don't even vaccinate my dogs.
My dog almost died from vaccination.
I do rabies.
It was unfortunate.
That's it. I have one child. I have a stepson. I have been in his life since he was 2 years old. And he got his initial vaccines. And he is my only child that has chronic illness. He has allergies. He has asthma. He has been labeled ADD since he was probably 4. And we struggled with this for years. And going back to the allergy thing, it was so funny. We took him to an allergist. I don't know. He was probably 9 years old. And they're pricking his skin, and he is coming up allergic to everything, absolutely everything. And my husband and I go home and we're thinking, okay, what do we believe philosophically? What do we believe is going on? It is not possible to be allergic to absolutely every food on the planet. That doesn't make sense. What's going on? It's his immune system. So we did this challenge, this heavy metal challenge test, this urine test for him. He has lead through the roof in his brain.
Did he live in Flint?
No. Yeah. He did not. So we've been detoxing him for years, pulling these heavy metals. And it can be from vaccines. It could be from living in an old house. It could be 4 generations back, passed down from his mother.
Right.
But I believe it's the right choice for my family. I've seen so many vaccine injured kids in our practice. We just had one pass away 2 years ago. Actually, this week, he was a 6-year-old boy who it was a documented vaccine injury, and he had very severe cerebral palsy and would come into our office and was in a wheelchair and just moaning in pain. And the only thing that made him feel better was my husband adjusting him. And it was, he would leave with a smile on his face. But I stand by it. I just feel like people get so upset about it. But if you have so
what
much
about
faith
the proliferation
in your vaccines,
of measles and everything else? I mean, I don't have any kids, so I'm fortunate to not have to analyze this yet. But I've really tried to keep an open mind. I really, as soon as I heard that there was a connection, it made sense to me on some level instinctually. I never researched it again because I don't have kids, so I didn't have to go down that route. But I've seen both sides of
the coin. If you look at these outbreaks, most of them are coming from vaccinated populations. They really are. You're putting a live virus in these kids. And measles probably aren't going to kill my child.
Yeah,
I'm not worried
just,
about it.
I just actually learned because I have a 3-month-old baby. So I've so far said no to all the vaccinations because they start on day one of her life, her first day of life. They start with.
See, I think that's insane.
Insane. Yeah.
There's
insane.
No reason to start
day,
that
she
quick.
She hasn't even like learned about, you know, what light is or, you know, air yet. And they're trying to put vaccinations. So I said no to everything so far. But, you know, there's a lot of controversy in my family about it and even between my partner and I about it. But I don't even know where I was going. Oh, what I did learn in the conversations is like, my boyfriend had whooping cough as a child, and he's a healthy, strong man. And my mom had measles, mumps, and rubella as a child.
And developed an organic natural immunity to it.
Right. So I guess like my whole theory was like, whoa, well, I mean, I understand some of, I mean, I did a lot of charity work in India, so I treated polio, and I see it's devastating. You spend your life in a wheelchair. But I actually didn't realize that, you know, even my mom's generation, so she's 70, they all, you know, a lot of people in that era did get measles, mumps, and rubella.
Right. Well, and it's like now they're vaccinating for HPV and chickenpox and all these other things that who knows. I mean, my take on it, my own personal take is, A, you should do whatever you think's right for your family, but you better be educated. You better go out there and you don't just listen to, what's her name, Jenny McCarthy or Angie Vijinsky or whoever. Like, go do your homework for real, people. Like,
Count on just your doctor telling you.
That's right. Yeah. Well, the doctor, I mean, the doctors have their own agendas and they're pushed by other people to do certain things to stay, you know, within the law and to stop any type of lawsuits.
As
of
a parent, nobody is going to be your child's advocate but you.
That's
period.
Right.
Yep. I don't care how educated anybody is. Nobody stands up for your child but you.
And it's not the right answer. The same answer. Everyone at this table has a different answer. And what makes sense for our immune systems, the places we're going to be traveling in the world, you know, where you're going to be taking your kids at certain ages, the groups of people they're going to be around. As far as I'm concerned, there are certain vaccinations my child will have. And,
Wow.
Ooh, that was odd.
Usually would say would, because I don't even really think I want children, but maybe my adopted child in 20 years or my natural home birth in a I'll catch them in a salad bowl child. But either way, you know, if I were to have a child, that child would have certain vaccines and I would be darn sure to be doing some detoxifying processes along with that so that those heavy metals wouldn't, you know, set in. Another thing I would do that I've read about is, and I know this from administering so many flu shots at corporations, you know, shaking the bottle. So you know how a flu vaccine comes in those little tiny bottles and they pull from that bottle with a needle? Shaking that bottle because the heavy metals fall to the bottom. So I would absolutely insist I have a brand new bottle. When my child was vaccinated, I wouldn't want to see that thing come straight out of the container. And I would make sure that that person shakes it up. I don't want anything sitting at the bottom of that. That's going to lessen any heavy metal, you know, type issues.
My father-in-law is an MD, and he likens it to the bottom of a red wine bottle.
That's right.
All the sediment.
Yeah.
And that could be your
kid's where
shot.
It is. And you know,
and it could.
And there's the one, right? There's the child. And Priya, you and I had a discussion recently about this idea of like mass population and healthcare benefits of the total population and the small percentage that it actually harms, and how the good of the mass is worth the harm of the small. Do you remember this?
Right. Yeah, it was in my ethics class.
Right. Talk about that for a minute, if you could.
Well, we just learn in ethics. It's like there was a time when there was multiple different dyes used, you know, for people that had MRIs and they needed to have a dye. And there was a like more high quality clean dye that had much less reaction, you know, only like, let's say 0.8% of people reacted to that dye, but it was a lot more expensive. And then there was the more, you know, cheap version of the dye that had a much higher reaction rate, like 10%. And I'm kind of fabricating these numbers, but it was something similar to that. And, you know, so even though the much higher quality dye had a lot less reactions, insurance wouldn't cover it. And so the only insurance would cover the kind of subpar quality dye, which had more reactions. And then ultimately, the company that made the high quality dye no longer makes the high quality dye. And now the only thing you can get is this kind of lower quality dye that has more reactions, but it's cheaper. And so when you think about something like a vaccination that they're just trying to vaccinate as many people as possible, as cheaply as possible,
right.
I'm really questioning the quality of these ingredients.
That's the problem right there, is what are the additives in here? And I wish we could get to a place where these additives were not put in there, because I would not have a problem with vaccines if it wasn't for those additives. Yeah. But a lot of times that is what brings it to the masses. That is what brings it to the entire world. And this idea of, you know, harming a few to protect the masses, to protect the most, I understand it. And I understand what they're doing in healthcare. And again, I think it all goes back to making your own choices, getting informed, realizing what you and thus your children, your family, you're ready to deal with. When I used to do a lot of these flu shots, I remember specifically when I'm always the face person at these. And I don't take a flu shot. I think there's no reason for it. I'm a strong, healthy person. I can handle getting the flu. As a matter of fact, the years I do get the flu, I am the healthiest for like two more years, because I think I built up the immunity and I'm, you know, prepared and protected. But when I'm at these flu shots, people always come in and the first thing they ask me is, you know, they might say, I'm scared. I don't know about the flu shot. Everyone says all these things and it could hurt me and I could get the flu and blah, blah, blah. What do you think? And I always say, well, it doesn't matter what I think. like who am I? Like, they don't know anything about me or what I know or what I don't, you know. But why don't you go back to your desk? Why don't you take 5 minutes, take a few deep breaths? If you meditate, go into meditation. If not, just calm yourself and then ask yourself, say yourself, is this appropriate for me? Do I need this flu shot? And come back if you want one and don't if you don't.
That
you
should
know?
Be true for a lot of challenges in your life, right?
That's right.
Just go back to yourself and not, turn to unknown authorities.
And there's got to be more of an awareness in our country of what, like through blood tests, through even a hair test of what you have going on in your body. I found out in my health journey that I had somewhat high levels of mercury in my body. And so started a detoxification process on that. But I also realized very clearly that a lot of these things, like we were mentioning the lead, you know, these get passed on from generation to generation to generation. And so, you know, I personally, we chose not to vaccinate our son. He's very healthy. And, you know, so I have to assume that he has mercury somehow because I had a pretty decent dosage. I was fully vaccinated as a child, fish filling, you know, there's lots of ways that I could have gotten that. But, you know, if you take that combination of this immune gut health and the microbiome and all of these conversations we have about really keeping our immune system strong. And then you combine that with decades and generations of all these different things that we pass on to the next and to the next. And then you take a vaccination and then you give more to that person. I really think that that's why we see an alarming more rates of different types of autoimmune diseases, whether it be autism, whether or not, you know, but we're seeing more and more of it because our bodies just can't
eliminate it.
As I'm looking around the room, every single person in here is shaking their head yes.
That's kind of been my question. Like, I wonder, since my mom had measles, mumps, and rubella, and then I was raised in her womb and breastfed, I'm like, maybe I didn't even need those vaccinations. Maybe I already actually got her immunity.
You should have told her when you were born you didn't need
Mom,
them.
I don't need these. speaking of detoxing, you know, is a pretty solid thing to do in general, let alone after vaccinations. Amber, any foods that you think would really help people with their detox? And then we'll move on to Julie, maybe about different fitness routines or, you know, ways to detox the brain and the body as well. Mm-hmm.
Well, definitely what comes to mind is cilantro is the strongest chelator.
Oh, yeah. And so, will you explain what chelation is?
It helps pull out the heavy metals in your body. And you can do chelation therapies, specifically if it was a really strong case.
So it's funny you say that because I have a lot of people that tell me they hate cilantro. And the first thing I ask them, you already know what I'm going to say, is do you have metal fillings?
Yeah.
Because typically people who have metal fillings hate cilantro because it tastes like metal to them because it's pulling the metal out of their fillings. Oh. It's unbelievable.
Well, I totally believe that. And I love cilantro.
Can
I
ask again the least aware? When you say cilantro, would you mean just putting some cilantro chopped up on top of your salsa? Is that enough? Or is it like a cilantro-based...
You have to have a pound and a half and shove it all in.
I don't know. That's what I'm asking. I have no idea.
Yeah. Cilantro.
I mean, you would if you were using it medicinally, you would want to be juicing it or blending it into I don't want to use the word smoothie, but some sort of, you know, health tonic where you could blend it in. That way you could soak up the fiber as opposed to juicing. But also any grasses. I mean, I'm a big promoter of wheatgrass, barley grass. Any grass is fresh. I'm not into pills and dried versions of it. Algaes, I think, are really important as far as, you know, maintaining the health and the balance. And, you know, again, I don't have kids myself. It's such a sensitive issue, but I personally would not want to be responsible for making that decision to give my child the vaccinations because, I mean, God forbid something ever did happen. That was my choice that I put on my child. If my child wants to travel all the country when they're an adult and they want to get vaccines to do so, but for me to make that type of life-altering potentially decision, I wouldn't feel comfortable with it.
Well, it's tough both ways because if you don't do the vaccines and they get sick, then you have guilt there. If you do the vaccines and something happens, you have guilt there. one way or the other, ladies, we're going to have some guilt.
We're going right? to
yes, I mean, it is not easy for being sure. a mother or being a whatever, you know, raising society, period. But Julie, why don't you touch upon the fitness side of things a little bit if you have any thoughts?
Well, let's see. We all know it's pretty simple and clear that exercise increases energy. It decreases chronic illness. It may help with between the spirituality of our mind and our digestive system as well. So it has so many beneficial benefits. However, no one really can stick to it still. Mm-hmm. So growing up here, moving all around the United States, coming back, I was really surprised about the obesity and the different chronic illnesses that come in Detroit as well.
Being, hey, are you picking on Detroit?
I know. I love Detroit.
Look at this room.
I love Detroit, and I love to be back here. But it is exercise can be like a preventative modality to prevent chronic illness. Or if we're talking about health and wellness in general, just vaccine. I mean, our main formula is how do we stay healthy for the longest period of time.
That's right.
Whether that's whatever it is. With supplements, exercise, nutrition, mindful meditation, things like that. And the two exercises that I'm looking at is aerobic and anaerobic, moderate different types of exercise using treadmills or functional training with muscle, creating more muscle in your body.
Yep. So it's very important.
Yes.
I just a small thing about my mental state and exercise is I had some acute depression years ago and was put on antidepressants, and I struggled for years and years. I was on them for 12 years, and I tried so many times to come off them, and I didn't do it the right way, and it was very difficult. Finally, about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I weaned myself off through, it took me 8 or 10 months.
And what do you do to slowly cut down the dosage?
She drinks vodka.
And I would
lots
just
of vodka.
She drinks lots of tequila
every day.
And careless sex. No. And that's when I started weight training 6 days a week, heavy weights, and that's what is right for me. But those endorphins they saved my life. It saved my life. And I continue to do it. And I was one of those people. I was always active and I worked out, but it was because I would wanted to lose weight or I wanted to do this. And now it's like, that's my happy hour. It is the best hour of my day, and it keeps my head right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Could you, I'm sorry, what's your name again?
Julie.
So could you give examples of adding more muscle that wouldn't take without having to use a lot of weights? Because that works for you and that's fantastic. But for me, I find it, it's too intense for me. So do you have examples of that?
You know, there's so many different types of exercise out there, whether it's functional training, strength training, bodybuilding, you know, to the extreme of bodybuilding, or bar classes, yoga.
Yeah.
Yoga counts. Yeah, yoga counts.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Check. You know, there's aerobic exercise and then there's anaerobic exercise, and both of those are contingent upon what your resting heart rate is. So when we wake up, we take our resting heart rate. How many?
We do.
Yeah, well, when we do, or if we do. And
what should that be?
Well, it ranges per person and gender.
What, 50 to 70, 40 to 60, 20 to 30?
Let me see. I'm going to take a wild guess. We're all between our 30s.
About 30s.
Yeah,
about 30s. There we go. Let's go with 30.
I'm going in the 40s, sorry. But between your 60s and 65s to be average, and make sure that we're healthy. Our heart is healthy. The higher the heart rate goes, the harder it has to work.
What about interval training? Because I've heard in terms of natural human growth hormone, obviously human growth hormone is what we experience. That's how we grow as an adolescent into adulthood, and then it plateaus. And then as you get older, it decreases. And that human growth hormone, hence the issues with people are artificially and putting in their bodies because your body responds to it. But I heard that interval training as you get older, so like when you, for example, if you were to be on a treadmill but you sprint for 30 seconds to a minute really hardcore and then you rest, you know, walk for a second and do those intervals, that naturally increases human growth hormone. I don't know if that's true to your findings. What do you say about that?
You know, there's so many variables that respond to exercise, and interval training, I think, is a great resource to reframe your metabolism. So if you're going up a minute, down a minute, up a minute, down a minute, your metabolism is going to frame to whatever that aerobic is at.
Is that why you make me work out like that?
Yeah. We'll take a minute rest, and then we'll bring your heart rate up.
God,
and then we'll take a minute.
She kills me. So I train with Julie, and we train a couple times a week for about a half hour, and then I supplement it with other things. And to your point, Angie, when it came to the endorphins and the release, it's funny because I've been really working out hard lately. I've been doing an hour a day. I've been going to a lot of classes. A lot of those are at night because that's when I'm available to do it. And I've pretty much foregone any type of evening rituals with my friends for my workouts at this point. And it's just what I'm choosing to do to get beach body, get ready. I'm there finally mentally. So it's nice to go forth with it. But I'm finding these 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock classes are keeping me up till 1 a.m.
Oh,
like it gives me so much energy, and I forgot, and I like totally forgot, and all of a sudden it's 1 a.m. I'm like, I can't believe I can't sleep. I have to be up at 5 a.m. and I have to be on air. And like, what the heck did I do? You know, but until my body gets used to that again, in one day it will, and I'll be able to go to bed 2 hours later. But right now it's giving me such a rush, and it's mental and it's physical, and you know, I'm all zinged up. And so it is very obvious that it does that to us as well. So.
I love interval training. I teach a class 6 days a week. It's called HIIT, High Intensity Interval Training.
Where do you teach?
At the CrossFit gym.
Nice.
That I work at. And people have great results with it. It's just tricking your body. It's creating a dynamic movement patterns. I switch up. Some days it's 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. Some days you're working for 20 minutes straight. It's just creating, we're tricking your body, and people just have great results with it.
You're full of tricks, Angie.
I am.
And I bet your Diva Cup stays in real nice.
My Diva Cup stays in except when I squat heavy. Yeah.
Have you seriously had it come out?
No, it doesn't.
It'll like fall like, oh.
A little bit. Actually, I have a girlfriend, and I have all my girlfriends using the Diva Cup.
Nice.
Because I use the Lunette Cup,
because I cannot stop talking about it.
So
I'll be like, I have my Veggie Cup in right now. But one of my girlfriends said that she thinks her vagina is too big for it because it sits sideways. I don't understand. It must be like the shape of it. I'm not going to help her out figuring out how it should be placed. But
the Lunette Cup, the reason I went with that is because they have various sizes.
So there's two. There's a if you had a child and if you didn't have a child. So it must be like.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Blown out or not blown out.
So I've never used a Diva or Luna cup, but I do use all organic tampons. And the reason for that, and a lot of listeners might not know this, is that they actually dye. They literally bleach tampons so that they're that bright white color when you're getting anything other than organic. So you are literally putting inside of you a cotton ball soaked in bleach. And then there's this whole thing, what is it, TSS, that toxic shock syndrome? Mm-hmm. No kidding. Yeah, if you're going to shove a bunch of bleach chemicals up yourself, like, yeah, it's
right.
Disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was just a lawsuit. The older generation, 80-somethings, always put talcum powder.
Yeah.
And there was a woman's family that won a huge lawsuit. I think it was a Procter & Gamble, but I'm not going to throw whatever brand it was. But anyways, it was, you know, they had like a $75 million settlement because they found that this older generation has an increase of tumors. And most of them have found talc within those tumors.
Right? Oh, my goodness.
So because it was just a best practice to put the talc in the underwear lining. So I think the bleached tampons are our generation's version of that.
Right. Yeah.
It's something that's, it's something people need to be aware of.
Yes, they do. Well, so buy organic.
Yeah, cotton's one of the highest sprayed chemical crops.
Right.
On top of it.
Yep. Yeah.
So you have the bleaching, but I mean, the
pesticides,
cotton alone
herbicides,
is so
herbicides.
Bad.
So basically, you're getting a little Roundup weed killer in there, too.
Roundup.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Round it up.
Yeah.
Speaking of, like, I'm just like really into this whole microbiome right now. It totally changes your whole, you know, so then, on top of it, now you have a yeast infection. So let's give you more different things. But, you know, if you have pesticides that you're putting in your vagina, no wonder your vaginal flora is not
a little off.
Not having
a little
it.
Off, yeah, because you're killing your good bacteria also.
Yep. Well, with that, we got the word vagina in, and it's time to go. I knew it would happen.
I just started my period, by the way.
I may have too, actually. Thank you all for being here. I mean, I have a list of, you know, 20 topics that we were going to hit, and we got to about four of them because everyone had such great input and so many things to discuss. So it's really nice hearing all the different sides of all this. I am excited to have you all back on and, you know, different one-on-one times or hopefully even again as another big group. That'd be a ton of fun. I think we're all going to head out to Ferndale and go see Joel at Green Space Cafe, eat some healthy food, and some of you drink some healthy wine, and I look forward to that. But until next week, we will be back with more podcasts. We'll see you then. Have a happy and healthy week. Thank you for listening to the Cassie Sobelton Show. I hope you heard at least one easy health upgrade on today's show that you can immediately implement into your life. Remember, over time, implementing small health upgrades will make a big difference in your health. Don't forget to follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Cassie Sobelton. For more information or to hire me as a speaker or wellness consultant, please visit CassieSobelton.com. See you next week.
This is a previously recorded episode.